Scott, we talk about the state budget quite a lot on this program, but for people who do not know the process, why don't you walk us through it from A to Z? How does a state budget get proposed? How does it get done?
Well, it's great to be back with you and your listeners. A lot of people don't see what goes on behind the scenes with the budget, and I can tell you that what happens is it starts usually in the fall leading up to the governor's budget address. And what happens is from multiple perspectives. First, you have the governor who collects basically budgets from all the existing agencies that the budget actually funds, you know, reflecting any changes, reflecting any potential contractual increases. They spend the whole time collecting it all up, and then the governor takes what that is and kind of merges it with any of his own new initiatives that he wants to do, and then he creates his budget proposal, which actually, you know, the public gets to see, and we get to sit through 90 minutes of listening to in the first Tuesday in February. Throughout that same period of time, the appropriations committees, I can speak more definitively with the Senate as opposed to the House, but I'm sure they go through something similar. We actually are also collecting those types of data. What are they actually spending out of each line item? What kind of revenues are coming in, whether it's the fees or tax revenue with the Department of Revenue, and tracking that throughout that whole time and trying to come up with a baseline budget, which is a budget that would be, if nothing else changed and any contractual obligations that we had and no additional reductions in certain programs or additions of new programs, what we expect that he might come out with. And of course, once he does, we have to go through a process of kind of pulling apart information. Usually they provide it the day of the governor's budget address, his budget book. And we really try to get into what the budget detail is, the things he doesn't talk about with the public but are kind of buried in the budget. And we spend probably about 2 weeks really pulling that apart leading up to budget hearings. And at budget hearings, we have a chance to start, well, you know, what does this mean? Why is this number going up, or why is this one going down and this one over here is going up? In addition to that, we start to pull apart what his new proposals are. In this case, for like this past year, he wants to increase spending by $2.7 billion, or about 5.4%. And we try to make them justify and ask those questions throughout budget hearings to try to get to the bottom of it. Once budget hearings are complete, as you can imagine, there's a lot of things that we're told, oh, we can get back to you on this if they don't have it, you know, or things they don't have answers. Well, they get a letter from us. And it's listing out every single thing in every single hearing as to what they need to provide to us. And they have a deadline in order to get it to us. And once we have that information, we're able to get a little bit of a clearer picture of what the governor's truly presenting, especially as he's left things out, or if there's things that the cost increases aren't justified for that spending level. And then we get into negotiations. And those negotiations right now are a little bit different. Usually when you would have two chambers that are the same party, it'd be kind of like a one-on-one type of negotiation. I would say this has been a little bit different because this governor and this House aren't always on the same page. And so it sometimes feels like we're in three-party negotiations, which can be very frustrating if two of us agree and one doesn't. But we have a back and forth, and that back and forth continues, and you set aside the things you agree upon, and usually if it takes longer, it's because there's plenty that you don't agree upon. And through this whole process, we're continually monitoring where revenues are currently and using that as whether that's a justification to rein in certain things or push back against what the governor's budget proposal spending numbers are because of the fact that the revenues just aren't keeping up. So that's pretty much the process in a nutshell.
And, of course, the governor presented his budget this year, as you mentioned, a 90-minute budget presentation. God bless you having to sit through all of that. But, Scott, if you look at it, the governor's proposing, once again, to spend about $5 billion more than projected revenue. The discussions, I would assume, at this point are aimed at whittling that down a bit?
Oh, 100%. And it's actually a lot worse than what it looks like even on paper. Because of the fact that we already had a structural deficit and increasing spending by another $2.7 billion on top of that, that $4.6 billion, just shy of $5 billion structural deficit that he'll be proposing, is only if he gets revenue from adult-use recreational marijuana and games of skill, those two items. If he does not get either of those, which do not exist right now in law and have been very controversial for many different reasons, you're looking at potentially closer to a $7 billion budget hole. And what's very frustrating is he likes to tell the public that he's not going to touch the rainy day fund. He likes to take credit for the benefits of having a rainy day fund, but out of the other side of his mouth, he wants to basically drain it. And so that's one-time sources of revenue. Anytime anything comes out of that. And pretty much I can say with 100% certainty that if the rainy day fund is tapped into and exhausted this year, the following year is just going to be with no money in reserve, no money in the fund balance, no money in the rainy day fund. You're looking at only way of filling that is with massive tax increases, massive spending cuts, or a combination of both. And, you know, quite frankly, that they're okay with that because it's a goal of theirs to raise taxes. The House has actually shown as much by passing legislation to increase the personal income tax in the past. And, you know, that's obviously what we got to fight back against. Probably just as much of a concern, we strategically built up that rainy day fund because we were one of the worst states in the country with no money in reserve coming out of COVID. We had a negative outlook by all the rating agencies. We were paying more money for any debt that was on the books because of that negative outlook. And we were able to get a positive outlook because we built that up. We had money in case of emergencies, and we were saving money by having bond upgrades and getting lower interest rates to refinance old debt, so we're saving the taxpayers money. And by undoing all that, there's a ripple effect of negativity, which it's already started. Of course, the media didn't really cover it, but back in January, after the administration refinanced another bond, they moved our outlook from positive down to stable, which is kind of the opening salvo of them taking action, and their narrative underneath it was about all the things you and I are talking about right now, that the structural deficit is unsustainable, and that whittling down the rainy day fund will result in bond downgrade. So it's very frustrating. I have often said to people, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this in your lifetime too, where people say, oh, this is the most important election in our lifetime. I can tell you, just as a math guy, there's never been a more important election cycle that the chess pieces that the voters send back to Harrisburg after this fall's election are going to determine whether or not there's going to be massive tax hikes or they're going to rein in government. It's one or the other. There is no extra money to play games, and that's what they want to do.
We are talking with State Senator Scott Martin, who is chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, about where we are in the state budget process. Scott, that rainy day fund, it, as you mentioned, it's there in case of emergencies. Currently, we're not in any sort of an emergency situation, are we?
No, we're not. And that's the other thing that's concerning is they like to redefine what an emergency is. And we like to point out that their thirst to increase spending constantly is not an emergency in the Commonwealth. And they literally, that does not resonate with a lot of people up there in that dome. I believe that we need to somehow put into place more stricter language, because you know words matter up there, and they'll try to twist and turn anything to be what an emergency truly is. But at the end of the day, there's been some changes between the federal government and the state government where we actually have to pick up more of the tab for any true emergencies that occur. And, you know, another time, a tornado rips through Bucks County, or you have a flooding up in the northern tier in the Susquehanna Valley. There's going to be more that we're responsible for as a state, but unfortunately, any penny left in a pocket is burning a hole for them, and they just want to spend it all, and it'd be really to the negative in so many different ways for Pennsylvania's fiscal stability and for the future.
You mentioned two sources of revenue the governor is counting on that do not exist: legalized marijuana, skill games. We are, of course, now heading into late April, which means that any collections that might occur this fiscal year are, well, we've missed 4 months' opportunity here. And it, of course, could take many more months before any legislation is passed. If it is passed, where do we stand, particularly on skill games? I know there's been a lot of discussion about that. Are we anywhere near a consensus on what to do there?
Well, first and foremost, you are hitting the nail right on the head, is that he's also planning on spending the revenue that he is collecting from these phantom forms of taxes right now. And if you're really depressed me, I'll tell you that going back last year and this year, he multiplied the revenue coming in for adult use cannabis by two, and he multiplied games of skill revenue by five in order to try to make his numbers work. You know, my experience in watching the states that have legalized marijuana, that the numbers never even come close to it. I don't think the numbers would come any close with the games of skill. And then when you add in the fact that he wants to spend money this year when those systems don't even exist yet, the mechanisms to even collect it or how people report it. And so it's another a lot of smoke and mirrors with that. I do believe that the games of skill revenue is one that could potentially be closer to potentially reaching some sort of middle ground between all the parties. It's a very divisive issue up there. And of course, there's a court decision currently that's on the books that the Commonwealth Court ruled that they're not gambling. And unfortunately, that's also been appealed to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And unfortunately, and I do not know why, they literally have been sitting on making a decision in that case for at least a year and a half. And in reality, what that puts us in the position of is that even if there is an agreement, it could eventually go right back into court because as of right now, the existing ruling says it's not gaming. So again, it's a very complicated issue with a lot of different interests on it. They need to be brought into the fold somehow out of fairness to the other entities out of there. And there's a lot of companies from other states that are outside of Pennsylvania that are making a lot of money off of these things and not paying taxes in Pennsylvania. But again, this far into a year and it still doesn't exist, there's no way they can collect the money, which means that budget hole is that much bigger that we've been talking about.
The budget deadline constitutionally is the 30th of June. Does that mean we're now having serious negotiations or have they not quite started yet?
Well, you see things happen. Like, I'm not sure if you're aware this week, the House is actually passing the governor's budget, which is really a pointless show of because there's no agreement on it. And so they're sending over different components of the budget bill right now. Listen, I would love to get the budget done on time. I would love to even get it done early. But at the end of the day, with the pressures that we're faced with these two entities, the governor and the House Democrats that they're negotiating with, they don't like to give Republicans wins, and most of our wins we seek are things that can grow Pennsylvania's economy or help grow us demographically, more, you know, policies to help that growth. And that's what led to the big delay last year, because they refused to bend. Now, ultimately, they started to feel a lot of pressure. They started to bend on things like getting Pennsylvania out of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which was a massive win, getting permitting reform into statute, not just a handshake. We're able to get those things done, you know, continue to address, you know, making Pennsylvania's tax rate more competitive. So there's things that we're going to push, but, you know, we're not just going to go along with their plan. We realize that we're kind of holding up two massive boulders uphill dealing with both these entities, and we'd love to have more reinforcements up in Harrisburg. But at the end of the day, we're going to fight as long as we can to have a responsible budget that actually gets true wins that can position Pennsylvania for a more prosperous future, not one of just big government. And hopefully the voters will have a say in that. And that's what I'm praying for. But we're in discussions right now. But we will not finish a budget unless it's the right budget for Pennsylvania that makes sense.
State Senator Scott Martin, chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Senator, where can folks find you on the web if they have the desire to learn more about this?
Well, if they go to SenatorScottMartinPA.com, they'll have direct access. And, of course, Senator Martin PA is my hashtag my handle for most social media, and we usually put out updates on there as well, too.
State Senator Scott Martin. Scott, as always, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.